Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified with your host, Eric Taylor, and myself, Shiva Maharaj. Today is another edition of our Q&A, or submitted by our loyal listeners out there, all two of you, or maybe more. Let us know how many you are. How's it going, Eric?
Oh, it's just another day full of data breaches, penetration tests, and lots and lots and lots of coffee consumption.
Coffee is good. Black Rifle, if you're listening, we want you.
We would love a sponsorship of some coffee.
I know Eric would. He could go through a bag a day.
Probably.
So what are we kicking it off with today? What's the first article submitted by our listeners?
The first one I think we're going to dive into really is Cisco will not fix zero-day remote code execution, RCE, vulnerabilities at the end of life VPN routers. So there's been some zero days, as you can tell from this, that's been released via GitHub, where you could be able to SSH, or not through SSH, but the GUI, be able to race to an elevated command prompt in a GUI from a Cisco VPN. What is your take after looking through this article so far? I think we're going to have the same opinion.
I applaud Cisco. It's about time vendors start saying no more updates to end of life hardware, because that is how we get into companies coming to you or I saying, hey, we have legacy blah, blah, blah out there and we got hacked. Well, you got hacked because you're too cheap to spend money. There's no need for legacy systems. I do not care the excuse.
Yep. Even on this article, I agree with you 1,000%. You know, there are small business models here that are listed on this website, and we'll have the link for those who are in the audio version of this thing. There are end of life as of December 2nd, 2019. So we're coming up on 3 years. We're at 2.5 years. So even if you were waiting for end of life and then cycling out, say 4 or 6 months afterwards, you know, I don't agree with it, but I can easily see that standpoint, you know, trying to maximize the life or the shelf life of your hardware. But, you know, we're at 2.5, coming up on 3 years past the time that this thing has come into life. It's time to move on.
Let's be honest here. December 2019 was EOL, end of life, for those of you who don't know what that is. Now, do you think all of those router models are up to date with their software patching?
Absolutely not.
So what does it matter if no more patches are going to be released after EOL?
You would think that they would just hopefully, as in the clients or MSPs or anybody that's, you know, selling these things and using them, that they would eventually get themselves together and get a newer model, right? But
that would cost too much. That would cost a fraction of what you or any other IR firm would charge post incident. What are you talking about? That's madness.
You know, I get it, but at the same time, you have to invest in your technology. You got to invest in your security. If you're not going to do it, who the hell is?
Your insurance company when they have to pay your ransom?
Yeah, like that's going to save you.
You know, I do want to bring up the Accenture breach that we all don't have much information on, but by all accounts, they were able to recover very quickly with barely missing a step, if at all. And I'd like to see more businesses, small, medium, large, enterprise, get to that point.
I'm wondering if they just had really, really damn good backups.
I think the Accenture bench goes deep and they have the capabilities and they do what they say, as opposed to most providers who, you know, they're like, do as we say, not as we do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sorry, I got to turn on this. Have my headlight over here. But I don't know much about them, right? So I'm going to go out on a limb and make some assumptions that they are, from all accounts that we see so far, they seem like they are what we call tip of the spear. They actually like you said, they eat their own dog food. They are, you know, actually doing things correct. So I would love to see a postmortem, even if it's, you know, by them or somebody else that could just attest to the findings and their actions that they've done. But like, this is how we recovered so fast.
Well, they did. They did come out and say they just restored this. They isolated the intruder. Then they restored from backups, and that's it. And they hired a third-party firm to come in to do the IR because they thought it would be a conflict of interest for them to do it themselves, which I think they get 3 for 3 there, 100%, A+. And, you know, if more firms can respond like that, ransomware would be less of a hassle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, definitely if what they are saying is true, then massive hats off to them. Yeah,
oh, they did a job. Why wouldn't it be true? No company's going to lie. Come on now.
Oh, like the pipeline? Yeah. Colonial Pipeline. Yeah, we didn't hit. Oh, crap.
Kaseya, sorry. Oh, boy. Allergies. What can I say?
So you can't be doing that. If we ever get Black Rifle Coffee to do sponsor us, I can't be spewing coffee all over my desk when you make me laugh.
Challenge accepted.
So the next topic we want to go into before this conversation gets wildly off track here. Chase Bank actually leaked their customer information to its customers. This is a freaking interesting story where they flat out, they just don't care. They're like, sorry. You know, we actually sent you information for another customer and we're going to send you some free crab monitoring. You know,
I see something there that says Experian, another dumpster fire of data leaks. So here's my take on this. And I did a hot piece on LinkedIn, my little douchey posts with a nice little blue fluorescent background. But here's the thing. As long as data collection is an asset on a company's balance sheet, and not a liability, this will continue to happen. And there's no way that any of this is ever going to stop unless there is a measure in place to fine the company for these data breaches. For, I don't want to call this negligence because, you know, these things can happen to anyone, but there should be processes in place to mitigate these things.
Exactly. The one thing that I would just want to hold on there for a second that you mentioned too, but you know, they simply say, we are sorry for letting you down, quote unquote, again. I added that part in, but would like to offer you 1 year free credit monitoring through Experian Identity Works, states Chase.
So I'm going to give, go ahead.
I just think that this is like, hey, sorry, we stuck you up, held you at gunpoint and robbed you. Go down to this crooked cop. No watch out for you that we paid off. You know, it's like, let me just refer one bad person to another bad person. I don't think this is helping anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Chase a bad person in this case. Yes, it was probably a mistake. They came clean about it. And, well, actually, I don't know how they came forward with this, but Experian, man. Multiple breaches of hundreds of millions of people with social security numbers, addresses, date of birth, everything PII you need to take over someone's life. And nothing happens to them because they have really good lawyers and really good lobbyists.
Yep. It's really bad, man. It really is.
There is another bill on the floor for breach notification for banks that some of the banking institutions are trying to go against. They do not want to have to notify within 24 hours of a breach. They're asking for 72. I think 24 hours is enough to say, hey, we had an incident, and we will provide you information on an ongoing and as needed basis, but at least let people know.
Is there a current notification bill that has been passed where they have to do a notification at all?
I don't know. And furthermore, I don't even know if they follow these things because you and I both know institutions, companies that have had a security incident and they have data on New York State residents who fall under the New York Shield Act, which classify a breach as unauthorized access, which I love. It's not proof of exfiltration, blah, blah. It's unauthorized access. And one company in particular still has not notified New York State.
Mm-hmm.
So until these things are going to be enforced, everyone's data is going to be on the dark web. And pretty soon, once everyone's information is on the dark web, they're going to have to look for other ways to monetize this stuff, meaning the bad actors.
Well, that really brings into the what our last article will be in just a moment. But looking back over the, I spent some of this week looking back through all the breaches and everything like that from all my feeds over the various ransomware actors and a couple of the folks that actually sell the information on the dark web, Tor network, but you know, we call it dark web.
It sounds sexier.
It does sound
and sick. More dangerous. So therefore it markets better.
Dude, I ain't gonna lie. You freaking go to you try to click on the wrong thing on a Tor network and you're going to see crap. You are never going to be able to get out of your head. And so
that's why. I just click on the links you send me.
Just a second. I need to send you a malicious PDF real quick. So this next one really is one that especially hits home to me because we are, you know, everybody in my organization has T-Mobile. You know, I don't know if we are part of this just because our plan is still a quote unquote Sprint plan and hasn't fully transitioned over to T-Mobile yet. So I don't know how the databases are still separate because we still have different logins for Sprint accounts and T-Mobile accounts. So I'm thinking that it's completely separated, but I'm still nervous as crap over this one where it's not just your name, address, and dadgummit your social security number, but it's also your phone identification number, your IEMI. Hold on.
IEMI.
Yeah, exactly. So you can start you could actually literally start doing SIM cloning and stuff like that. Cause a lot of the Google phones, like the true Google phones,
well, are they including the eSIM numbers built into the phones themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So SMS, 2FA, I love you.
Mm-hmm. Now see, like iPhones still require a SIM card for T-Mobile.
No. Okay.
Now Google Pixels do not. So, you know, at least with an iPhone on T-Mobile and Sprint, you have that extra layer, if you will. I'll use an extra layer really, really loosely, but you have an extra layer of quote unquote security that they have to overcome to fully clone your phone. But if you're going around and people have Google Pixel phones, all you guys do is mimic that freaking number and you're golden.
So let's dive into 2FA here. Cause I know you think it's a dumpster fire. I think it's a dumpster fire. And a colleague of ours showed us a patch that the military issues for dumpster fires. I think we should start sending those out to people when they are worthy of a promotion. But is now a good time to really talk to your clients about moving to something like a Duo push notification for MFA?
Yeah, any form of MFA. Even Microsoft Authenticator is a freaking MFA.
That's kind of limited just to Microsoft. If, however, you have a smart provider and you are leveraging SSO to give you that one place to breach for the keys to the kingdom, which I'm of two minds there. I love it, but I hate it for that very reason. I think Duo is probably your next best thing, right?
Mm-hmm. I am so overly paranoid, maybe just because I'm in the cybersecurity space, but when I try to access my 365 Azure tenant, I get prompted with Microsoft Authenticator. And once I cleared that, then I get to a Duo notification because I'm just uber paranoid.
As you should be.
So,
I mean, you're an IR guy. You are dealing with ransomware operators. So they'd love nothing more than to pop you. So
get the stuff that's inside my teams. Holy McCrap.
Exactly.
So I think that's it for today. You know, nice quick roundup. Hopefully we'll
go. Actually, before we break, there is one more article I just sent you, because what's this podcast these days without getting a tad bit political?
Well, sure. Let me just pull this thing up here real quick.
It's in Slack. And for those of you, we have our own private Slack that we use to make fun of vendors.
Yeah, our co-host sometimes, Brian Weeks, we love making fun of him. Let me get rid of this pop-up ad and bring it up here. So does abandoning embassy and imposed security? Oh, dear God. Here we go. You're going to get me on my soapbox. We're supposed to keep this under 30 minutes.
Well, we're only at 16 right now, minus editing time. So here's the thing. I will preface this by saying my personal view is I don't think any president would have done any different in the withdrawal. I think the only variables that could have potentially been controlled are the ease and pace, or relative ease and pace, of evacuation. I think the fall was going to happen regardless of who the president is or was or will be. That said, I read a lot of articles where it seems there was no evac plan or contingency plan for the embassy and Americans and those friendly to American forces. And what really is starting to rub me the wrong way is we've seen China making overtures to the current Afghan government, or whatever we're calling them these days. What type of technology is being left behind that was that the former Afghan army was equipped with? What kind of technology may be left behind in the skirmish to get out of the embassy that can be exploited by APTs looking to get in on our technology? And that's where I'm going with this article.
Yeah, so I've seen some unofficial reports, but I've, you know, through history, we've seen a lot of this stuff where the embassy was being turned into a dumpster fire, literal dumpster fire. They were burning, not shredding, but fucking burning classified documentations inside of the embassy. We have seen reports where the Taliban is learning how to fly the Black Hawk helicopters that were there. We've seen reports of the Mark 19 grenade launcher, over 3,000 of them being left there. I agree with you. Should we get out? Yes. The reports that all the generals, all the people that were in the quote unquote information security space, whether that they haven't said, or I haven't seen any, I should say, whether it's, you know, CIA, NSA, you know, military intelligence, whatever the case is, that if we do this in the way that you're projecting, this is going to end fucking horribly. This is a bad way of doing this. And there's people who's come out on the news saying we have given this current administration so many names, where they're located, all this stuff, and they're not doing anything. It is literally like the way I look at this. It's like a kid just had a temper tantrum, picked up this ball, and is walking the fuck home.
I don't think it's that. I think the government, again, it could be the previous administration, this administration, or the next one, whatever incarnation. I think they're just tired of spending money to play whack-a-mole. You know, it's, you can't keep an occupying force and continue to burn billions and billions of dollars every year when our economy is as fragile as I think it is, at least. And we have other things to focus on. We're not, you know, we're not Team America World Police. Durka Durka.
We have been for so many centuries, though. We have been the world's police. God, here we go. but when China goes and says, look what America is doing, they're not going to be around to help you when the shit hits the fan. They're just going to pack up and leave. Again, that spoiled child who gets pissed off, takes his ball and walks home analogy.
But that was going to happen anyway, whether it was today, last year, next year, 5 years from now.
I think it's because of the lack of planning of getting our assets, our own citizens, the folks that were told, look, you help us, we'll take care of you. The lack of taking care of these fuckers, I should say fuckers, but these people,
I think
it was doing it.
I think we should have left through Bagram. Bigger facility, easier to Bagram Air Base would have probably been the better place to make the last stand for the evac and not the Kabul airport, because Bagram's bigger. You can move more volume through it and you could probably get this done. But you know, listen, it's 6-1 happens the other. Everyone's Monday morning quarterbacking this thing. I just hope they get our people out safely, quickly, and we can move on to our cyber warfare with, you know, the fantastic China. Four nations of China, North Korea, Russia, and Iran. So, and I hope that the embassy actually destroys anything that is technology related, not to give anyone insight.
Yeah. Thankfully, I haven't seen any reports where the embassy was overtaken during our occupation.
Well, I think we've learned a few lessons after Benghazi and a couple of the other incidents. So hopefully, you know, we're well on the way to getting the people and technology out of there, or at least destroying the technology to the point where it's not usable.
Yeah, let's not go down Benghazi. I'll start freaking cursing a lot.
We can do a special episode for that one.
Oh, gosh.
I promise I'll bring the crayons. and for those of you who don't know what we're talking about here, and I say this with peace and love, Eric is a former Marine.
No, but yeah.
But I think that's it for me today.
Me as well, man. If you've made it to the end of this episode, we want to say thank you so much for tuning in and enjoying it. If this is a value to you, you've got enjoyment, please do us a favor. Refer this to somebody, send it out on Reddit, send it out on LinkedIn, send it to your email. You know, help us spread the word. If you're on YouTube, please subscribe, tune in. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, please give us a rating. Let us know how we're doing. Until next time, thank you so much for tuning in.